got that nerd rage. Nerd rage. I got that nerd rage. Nerd rage.
From comics and games to movies and TV, this is the Nerd Show on 1310 KFKA. Now, here are the nerds.
Hello, nerdians. You're listening to the Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Here in the Allo Communications Studios, you've got the three co-hosts of the Nerd Show here, ready to get nerdy with you for the next hour. You've got Micah, Nick, and Scott, a.k.a. Darth Ambivalous. I shouldn't be saying that.
Darth Monger.
Darth Ambivalous.
Darth Harmonic.
That's all of us.
Why not let the professionals do it?
I know. I just keep forgetting. You do well, Micah. You do well.
Sometimes.
Most times. Most of the times. We all do well most of the times. Well, we had a very busy week of nerdy stuff.
Totally.
So much nerd. House of the Dragon, new episode that fast-forwarded 10 years. The Rings of Power that's moving that story forward. And then, of course, the three-episode release of the latest Star Wars live-action series, Andor.
Don't forget a new episode of She-Hulk.
Oh, that I have forgotten.
How could you forget that?
So I think that should be the most we talk about.
Absolutely. It's like the 40 minutes. Actually, with the biggest headline and news that I saw this week, Marvel Studios announces that they did not recast T'Challa. They felt it was too soon to recast that very pivotal piece of Black Panther. So if you're expecting to see Black Panther as we were familiar with him in the past, we will not be seeing that in this latest release of Wakanda Forever. They said, and I really liked it, that his death meant so much to the world, and people are still processing it with Chadwick Boseman. And to just keep his memory pure, full, that they couldn't in good conscience recast it.
My guess is we will see some utilization of some footage that they didn't use from the previous films. I mean, we saw that even in when they did Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker, that they did some of that with Princess Leia after Carrie Fisher had passed. And so I'm sure we will see some of that worked in some way, somehow, in order to make that work. But I do like the approach, and I don't think they should. And I think you've got an opportunity to move a story forward where you can have a new Black Panther, which I think we're going to see that as being T'Challa's sister. And I want them to go that route.
I hope so. Mike, I know Black Panther has been, and as is, if not, is still your favorite Marvel movie.
Number two.
Number two?
Yeah, I like not Endgame, the one before that.
Infinity War?
Infinity War. There we go. Now I'm using my brain.
There you go.
I feel like with Infinity War and Endgame, they're almost... No, I think they're two different movies enough. It's like with Lord of the Rings. Can you say that you like the Two Towers more than you like the Fellowship? To me, you like Lord of the Rings or you don't. Those three movies are so good, and you have to watch them all together. I almost feel like Infinity War is kind of the same as Endgame in that sense. But I think they're... I don't know. I think they're two drastically different.
Essentially a five-year gap in between the two films,
right,
which I think makes it have to be two different films.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I don't know if I'm the only one who believes this, but I don't know if I want Shuri to be like Black Panther, because that would make her be so much, because she would have to be the queen. She would have to be this warrior. Plus, she's already the smartest person in the MCU.
Right.
She can't be all of those at once.
She'd be the most powerful, like, brainiac superhero there is.
She'd be a Mary Sue. And she's fine the way she is. She's, like, her character's perfect. And I hate, like, giving, you know, already a really great character more to make her, you know... But you have these other characters who are good at so much... But Iron Man is incredibly flawed. Like, he's very smart and he's a warrior, but he's a warrior because his suit makes him a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
It's really his brain that makes him a warrior. I don't want Shuri to be everything. She has to have, you know, some kind of weakness.
And
I'd rather her pass it on to Nakia.
Yeah, is she, or to is Okoye. She got that warrior bone in her, you know, to be able to take up that mantle.
I don't think she has it. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I think she would be a great leader. She would have to mature because obviously she was a kid in the first one. I think her age was supposed to be 17. She would have to mature and learn a lot. But I think it would be, and I haven't done a lot of reading intentionally because I kind of want to be surprised about this. But I think that it would be best if they handed the Black Panther suit off to, say, Okoye would probably be the best choice because she's just this incredible fighter, incredibly loyal to the country. I would give it to Okoye, personally.
Well, we'll find out in just a few months.
We will?
Not even a few months.
It's November 23rd, I think.
Yeah, I guess it is about a month and a half away. So, gosh, cool news there. Curious to see how that'll all pan out. Let's just do other news and updates this time around, and we'll use that as our She-Hulk time to fast forward that. Gentlemen, other news?
Well, the other news I thought was kind of cool. This came out, I'm thinking it dropped earlier yesterday, but Deadpool 3 has been confirmed. And for those of you who saw the little teaser video with Ryan Reynolds in it, it's very typical Ryan Reynolds Deadpool-esque. He literally is sitting on the couch and says, I'm sorry I missed D23, been working really hard on Deadpool, been trying to think about it, and they show all these cutscenes of him doing different things. He's working out, he's typing, he's thinking, and he goes, and I got nothing. It's completely empty. Just totally. And then right at the end of it, you see Hugh Jackman walk behind him, and he goes, hey, Hugh, you want to do Wolverine one more time? Yeah, sure, Ryan. And that's it. And then they've got a couple of plays with his words and said coming hewn instead of coming soon. And it's for September 2024. And then they play, you know, the
2 years out.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's the Whitney Houston and I Will Always Love Hugh instead of you. So and then the logo was pretty awesome because it's the round Deadpool logo with the three Wolverine, you know, I don't know, are those his knuckles or his spikes or his
claws? You know,
adamantium claws that go swiping through it for the three. So I thought that was pretty amazing. And I'm excited. I thought the first Deadpool was really, really well done. I thought the second one kind of lacked a little bit of that same charm. But mm-hmm.
The second one falls victim to it's exactly what the latest Thor movie was. They found a great formula and then they followed it up with too many jokes.
Too much of the...
I did watch Thor a second time, and I enjoyed it more the second time because I knew what to expect out of it.
And I wasn't with you. That probably helped tremendously.
Well, not necessarily, Scott. But it was, you know, going into it, knowing how goofy it was, I was in a different mindset than going in of, okay, what are they going to do? Because Ragnarok was so good. So I enjoyed it the second time more, but that doesn't always happen. Oftentimes I'm more critical the second or third time I watch something because I'm picking up more on things.
I'm like that too. When I get out of the theater a lot of times, I'm like, this was great. Some of the latest Marvel stuff, I get out and I'm like, wow, that was a lot of fun. But, and I think a lot of people are like that, especially watching the latest Marvel shows. It's been kind of we're kind of dragging along. These stories just aren't great and very experimental.
I have not watched She-Hulk, and listening to Scott and Micah off the air, I don't think I have intentions to watch She-Hulk. It's not at the top of my list. It's kind of fallen off for me, just like Ms. Marvel did.
You know, you can just go to YouTube and watch or read articles that say, here are all the Easter eggs.
That's pretty much all I need. Like, give me the synopsis of 2 minutes or so, and I'm just, yeah, it's not selling me. But we've got a lot of great things to talk about. I mean, three whole episodes of Andor, which was basically like an hour and a half, if not a little longer, of like an introduction of what this series is going to be. I don't think they could have released that in any better way, because I'm curious where it's going to go from here, but You know, the first two episodes, they were good. There was a lot of character development and building. But I would have been frustrated as a fan to see each episode stand alone for a week. So I love how they released it. I think it was a great introduction to that series. So we'll come back and talk Andor before we hit Lord of the Rings and House of the Dragon. Stay tuned, Nerdians, as we get nerdy.
Okay. Welcome back to the Nerd Show, coming to you from downtown Greeley, from the Allo Communications Studios. You've got Nick, Micah, and Scott, and we are shifting gears, and we're going to talk about Andor.
Andor what?
Andor nothing.
Andor Star Wars.
Oh, there we go.
AT-AT.
Yeah. Micah just says that with a grin on his face.
It's at-at. And
it always was and always will be.
Yes.
An at-at.
Isn't there something at in Andor that we can discuss a little later on?
There is, indeed. I feel like you're stealing all the thunder.
You know, for Andor, they have so much difficulty. Well, I think Star Wars itself is – what they're trying to do is bold. They're telling stories of individuals and characters that we know, like, and love – but we already know their fate and their outcome.
Yeah.
And so it's such an uphill battle to tell a captivating story to get, one, fans to continue to care, but also to bring in a new generation of fans when they already know what's going to happen. We know what happens to Cassian in Rogue One, but I, for one, think they're doing a great job both with the Obi-Wan series and with this series of, like, yeah, this is Star Wars, and this is a gritty, dirty, grungy Star Wars.
Well, you and I had the conversation like right after it dropped about the first 5 minutes of Andor. You're like, oh, he literally murdered a guy, shot him right in the head after he had killed another guy. And you're like, okay, that's gritty. And it also kind of shows you, because we saw that in Rogue One where he shoots the guy in the back and then he makes the statement about they've all done things they're not proud of. I love the fact that we are seeing this backstory. And I think to your point, we have not had 20, 30 years of backstory development that everybody's been able to formulate in their own mind. We have a new character that is very interesting that we want to know what happens or what happens to bring him to the point that we see him in Rogue One. And we haven't had too much time to try and come up with that story on our own. So they're telling it to us. And I really like it. I've seen a couple comments online. People are like, this isn't really Star Wars, and it's the least Star Wars movie I've ever seen. I disagree. I think it is some of the best storytelling, some of the best overall character development.
Some of the best storytelling, yes. But I can see where they say it's not really Star Wars, because it doesn't fully have a Star Wars feel. They do say the four-letter swear word, the S word, which they have never said in Star Wars. Nick, we were talking about this earlier. They do have kind of a sex scene where they don't really show anything, which is not a lot of Star Wars. They mentioned humans several times. They never say humans in Star Wars.
They do. They actually do.
Oh, do they?
There's references that it is, you know,
so
humans.
Do they actually say the word humans?
I believe so.
Han called Jabba a human being.
Yeah, he said, you're a wonderful human being. So, yes.
And he's a slug.
That. Yeah.
But there were some things that kind of took me out of the Star Wars feel. But I don't criticize. Yeah. I don't say that this is not Star Wars.
See, and I like the fact they're doing what they're doing.
I do, too.
Because it's more real. It does feel real.
We
don't get the flash. We don't get the elements. We're seeing the story in between or around what we've seen on screen for years and years and years, and I really like that. We are seeing the development of the bigger picture that we've normally been exposed to.
And it's darker.
It's very dark.
It's cynical in a way, but I don't think it's too cynical. So far through these three episodes, I feel it's just right. You know how there are some shows that just really bum you out? I don't feel bummed out after watching this. I feel like after the third episode, I wanted more. I realized I had to wait a few days.
Well, I think we'll get what I really like is, you know, it's not the political stuff we get to see and the might of the Empire and the Jedi Order. We get to see, I mean, just that day-to-day gritty turmoil of what this universe is like for average human beings and working beings. And what I like the most, like the most powerful moment for me in those three episodes, which is fun for this, you know, it's not really hypothesizing like we do for House of the Dragon, Lord of the Rings, because, I mean, we know it's going to happen. But when Cassian was explaining to, and I don't know that character's name, how easy it was to just break in and steal from the Empire because they're so proud of who they are that they could never envision a lowlife infiltrating them. That was a powerful moment in exchange, and that was part of the trailer too.
Yeah.
And I was glad they used it so early on because it was a statement. It was wow. He knows the Empire, and that's exactly what the Empire is.
Yeah. It got so big for its britches. It got so big that, as he said, you put on a uniform, you look like you belong there. You can just walk in and take it.
Well, and you've got – we were trying to do the math the other day, trying to figure out where this place is, because we know that this takes place 5 years before the Battle of Yavin. And for those of you who are not nerds, that was what they meant at the very beginning, where it says BBY5. That's before the Battle of Yavin. So 5 years of that. So we're essentially talking 15 years of the Empire. We're talking 15 years since Palpatine declared himself the Emperor and dissolved the Republic and turned it into a galactic empire. And so you've got 15 years of them building up and doing all this work to get to that. And that's a fairly quick time for them to go from, we're going to start doing this, to get to that level of arrogance. But all of the pieces were in place to just kind of step in and go, well, we're going to go from this to that, and here we go. And I'm excited about that. I'm excited about Cassian's, you know, story as a youth when they're strip mining that planet, and it's like, well, okay, where they're getting parts for either the Death Star or some of the Star Destroyers or whatever they're doing. And it's just, it's a great story that's got human elements to it that are raw and are emotional. I mean, and the music, oh my goodness, it is phenomenal.
The music is great, and it has a different feel. I think this is some of the complaints. The music doesn't have a Star Wars feel to it.
I wish fans would stop comparing. Like, it doesn't feel like Star Wars. Well, you know what? Star Wars hasn't felt like Star Wars to me since I was a kid, but it's more Star Wars, you know, because my version of Star Wars is always going to be Empire Strikes Back, number one, and then the other two in the trilogy. And the sequels or prequels didn't give me that same feeling. The sequels didn't give me that same feeling. Rogue One gave me that same feeling, and that's why I think I like Andor so much, because it's given me some of the background to what Star Wars was to me as a kid. But this whole, it doesn't feel like Star Wars. Well, everyone every year says, well, it doesn't feel like Christmas this year. Well, it doesn't feel like Halloween. Doesn't just embrace it for what it is. But one thing that Scott and I talked about the other day was, and we're still trying to figure this out, what did they mean when they rescued Cassian? You know, you have an indigenous tribe that has this spacecraft, land, probably the first time they ever saw anything like that. But we need to get him out of here because the Republic will kill him when they arrive. The Republic, the good guys. What do they mean by the Republic? Because that's still, I think, if we did the math correctly, was still when the Republic was at the height of its power. Well, not at the height of its power.
You're talking in between, you know, the first and the third prequel movie. Mm-hmm. So it's going on somewhere in that regard. So you don't know quite where that's at. We don't know how old Cassian is. We're speculating he's, you know, somewhere in his 30s. But we don't quite know. But yeah, again, you've got this whole element. So you're already starting to see this shift of they're changing the way they work. They're changing the way they operate. Palpatine's been in power and he's starting to make things happen behind the scenes. And not everybody is seeing it as being this wonderful environment that they're used to.
Well, they've already established in Star Wars that it's not good versus evil all the time. It's good-ish versus evil. Because in episode 8, the character, I don't remember who the character that played by had that Hispanic actor.
DJ?
Yeah.
Dojoy?
So he said, he was saying, let's see who these guys are selling to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Empire. Oh, he's also selling to the rebels.
You know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look, there's no, he's saying there's no good, there's no evil.
We get that conversation in The Mandalorian with Bill Burr's character.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a great episode, by the way. But, you know, look at what this war is doing to regular people across the globe. Not the politicians, not the soldiers, not the Jedi, but just average human beings who've had their lives, their worlds completely upended for political power and control of the galaxy.
And there's that theory online, which I think is kind of funny, that Luke Skywalker is actually a villain. Because look at how many people he killed. Look at how many jobs he destroyed.
He is a terrorist. I mean, we've already established that. But I know that we're running out of time in the segment, but alluding to Micah's comment at the beginning, we see the beginning of the AT-ATs when they're in the junkyard. You see the two walking cranes in the background when they're, you know, they're going through and they're salvaging these, you know, Vindicator class, you know, Star Destroyers, things like that. And you see these two basically cranes on legs go walking by, and I'm like, there they are.
We see those in Solo, AT-ATs. Too,
yeah.
You know,
we
a little
saw
bit
those.
In Solo.
Yeah. Just love that. Well, and we even saw it in the Mandalorian, the one time where they're in the water and they end up picking the Razor Crest out of the water when it comes in hot and everything else.
Scott, what are they called again?
They're called AT-ATs.
AT-AT.
AT-AT.
I was just trying to make sure.
You've got it right.
I'm so used to calling them AT-AT.
They are AT-ATs.
All-terrain armored transports.
That's right.
That's the only AT-AT is the only way to say them. That's the right way.
Well, you can say it differently, but
no, but you would be
the
wrong.
Only way to say it right.
But you would be wrong.
Stay tuned for more of the Nerd Show as we come back and talk about either Lord of the Rings or House of the Dragon. We'll decide when we come back. Stay tuned. Welcome back, Nerdians. You're listening to The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA, Northern Colorado's voice in the Allo Communications studios, as we dive into House of the Dragon.
We flipped a coin and it came up heads, and head looks more like a dragon than a ring, so that's what we went with.
We did.
And people are more likely to lose their heads in House of the Dragon.
We've already seen that.
Well, I think more like don't give childbirth. It doesn't matter who you are or who you're married to, childbirth is
just
risky.
Awful.
It's risky, it's awful, it's horrendous, and
I liked this one better because it was less graphic.
It was.
There was a lot of acting. Emma D'Arcy did a wonderful job beginning the episode with childbirth.
Yeah, it was weird. I knew it was coming, knew that we were jumping ahead 10 years, but man, it took me a long time to just kind of do that. Okay. This is Princess Rhaenyra. This is Princess Rhaenyra.
Yeah.
This is Princess Rhaenyra. And oh my gosh, is she got a very, it seems like she's got a different level of anger in her.
Vitriol. I mean,
yeah, yes,
spewing.
Great word.
Well, and then, it's been 10 years.
It has
and
been.
And she's, there's
putting
so
up
much
with all
bitterness
that.
Between her. And
Alicent.
Yeah. Oh, Alicent turned.
Alicent, my God.
She's evil. She might be the most evil person in House of the Dragon right now.
No, she is not the most evil person.
She's not, but
Larys is.
You
think? You don't think?
No, I think that
Larys is pretty evil.
I agree, but I think that we have seen our latest villain I was going to look up his name and I can't remember, but the guy with the honeybee that cuts off all of the,
That's Larys. I think that's Larys.
Is that Lord Larys?
He's the one who can't really walk, and his brother was
the
commander of the guard.
He was,
And his dad was the hand of the king.
Then yes.
That guy is currently. He is the new Joffrey.
Yeah, but you know what? No, he's not the new Joffrey.
Like,
he's the
little finger.
He's the new
guy that we hate.
You hate a lot of people in Game
but
of Thrones.
He is just manipulative behind the scenes, and you can see how he literally traps Alicent in that situation. He's like, you know, the queen asked for it, and so I made sure that
and
I gave the queen what
she wanted. He puts that on her, so she's going to be his pawn from now on, basically. So we've got very clearly that Rhaenyra and what's her husband's name?
Laenor
are not doing the hanky panky because those kids do not look like other Valyrians do. But it's amazing how no one will say a thing. No one will say, but it's obvious. Everyone knows that those kids are bastards.
They'll say it in whispers.
Oh, but Alicent is not. I mean, I thought it was hilarious in that one scene where they're walking away and she's like, you know, hey, best of luck next time. Maybe one of them will look like you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow, just that dig and that they're playing back and forth and...
Well,
it is just
imagine
ugly.
10 years, too, because it was hard for me to transition like you, Scott, to that 10 years of seeing Rhaenyra of just the she seems defeated and deflated.
Yep.
And that was not the Rhaenyra we had from last episode or these first five that we've had.
I don't like this Rhaenyra as much.
I don't either.
And that's why.
Well, but look at the 10 years. They were, you know, we end with them forced to marry after Laenor's lover was pounded to death by
Sir Criston Cole.
Yeah, that Rhaenyra slept with for the first time.
I hate that guy now.
Oh, yeah. Me too. He is
turncoat
hard to
bastard.
Like.
Oh yeah.
So this is a dark show. It's hard for me to watch this because of how dark and negative it is, and just I'm on edge.
I'm on edge for
you know
a different
who
way.
I'm rooting for now is Daemon. And there's just so much to talk about,
I've always been kind of rooting for him, even though, like, I want him to be good, but I'm rooting for him more now. So right now we see him, and he's in Essos. He's on the other continent.
Well, yeah, and they're trying to get him to stay, and I like that he didn't. He wants to because they can live in luxury, but his wife...
And he doesn't have to worry about politics.
Did you see them getting married, by the way, though?
Yes. I thought that was... telegraphed in the last episode.
Yeah. Oh, was it?
Yeah, they had talked about it, and it was, I mean, they had, you know, kind of had a conversation in the last episode. So, yeah, I saw that.
And his impotence is kind of gone because he has twins.
He's got two girls.
And one on the way.
And one on the way that was really sad to see that.
Oh, my gosh. That was,
harrowing. Tragic.
And it was the same. Literally, you're going back to King Viserys's, like, the very first episode. Mm-hmm. It's like... You know, sometimes you got to make the impossible choice, and you know, and he's basically in the exact same spot, and he won't do it. And Princess Lena, you know, Lena's like, nope. She goes, and she had said she wanted to go out like a dragon warrior,
yeah. And she did. She ordered her dragon, the oldest, biggest dragon.
That was awesome, by the way.
And you see that dragon? That dragon was going no.
Yeah, he was going no. And then he realizes that she's about to die. He realizes that you can see it, like the awareness all of a sudden just come on this gigantic dragon's face, and he's like...
And it's rumored in Game of Thrones that dragons are even smarter than humans.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't take much.
But that makes sense, but it played into that. So now here you go. I was thinking about this. You have Princess Rhaenyra, and the father of her children... is now dead, even though we haven't talked about it yet, but gets killed at the end in the burning of the castle that Larys, you know, puts together.
And the dad.
Yep, and the dad. And Daemon's children's mother is now dead because she was going to die in childbirth, and she died a dragon rider's death. And so you literally have Daemon and Rhaenyra that literally the other side of the parent couple of all of their kids are now gone. And it's like, is that going to play into it?
Well, and I think they're going back to Dragonstone.
Yeah, they left for Dragonstone. And then, you know, so the...
And to her credit, she allowed her husband to bring his lover.
So she's going to go back to Daemon. Is that the vibe you're getting?
I am thinking that we are going to see either a partnership or an agreement or
children?
Some sort of... I don't know about
children.
I absolutely agree. I don't know if they're going to get married, but there is going to be some kind of partnership.
Yep.
And the war is going to be, you know, between...
The kids. It's going to be a war between the kids.
Yep.
Between Rhaenyra's kids and between Alicent's kids.
And you can tell there are, like, all the kids are just... not competent.
They're
enough.
All messed
and,
up. Yeah.
Yeah, and I can tell you the second kid, not Allison's oldest, but the second one
who doesn't have a dragon.
Have a dragon, but that one's going to be a leader. That one's going to take over. The oldest one doesn't give a crap.
That's Aegon, right?
Aegon's the older one. Yeah. When that whole scene in the window was like,
gross.
I was like, wait, are we watching the boys?
Yeah. So He's doing some stuff at the kind of like the end of season two of The Boys.
Yeah.
Only he does it differently. Not because he's a sociopath, but no, because he's kind of a perv.
He's kind of, and he can get away with whatever he wants.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm literally the king's firstborn son, so what are you going to do?
So we're probably going to get Hightower back. Otto will probably return as Hand of the King if
he
doesn't.
They hinted to that in the previews. We will see Hightower back.
We also, if we're going to talk previews, Lena's dragon gets stolen.
Yep.
Curious. Hopefully that's just a kid taking a joyride. But how much time does Viserys have left?
Oh, I swear every episode he's losing more limbs. If you noticed, he basically doesn't have a left arm now.
Mm-hmm.
So 10 years have passed and he's, and he looks horrible. And they've done a great job with makeup.
Yeah, they have.
And the actor is phenomenal.
The actor does a great job and he is just, he's trying to keep the peace. And
he really, and I commend him. He's failing hard.
Yeah.
I mean, his wife's, not really manipulating him, but with Rhaenyra leaving, she's going to have his full ear. Plus with Otto returning, there's going to be some drastic changes. And I think Rhaenyra, I don't think has given up, but knows that she cannot do anything else in the Red Keep.
She literally is, she's removing herself. She's going back to Dragonstone and is going to kind of wait out until her father dies and then come back and claim her throne, which is going to make it even more difficult because Aegon will be there and you're going to see war potentially, in Westeros. And it's like, not sure how that's going to go. And, I think that's where Daemon and Rhaenyra will be able to partner up and lay claim to the throne. And
I'm curious what Laenor's parents think of Rhaenyra and his, I use in air quotes, children. Because they weren't in this episode, but they're going back to Dragonstone. That's not necessarily where Lord Corlys is, but they were in the previews, or at least his wife, Rhaenys. I don't know their names. I'm so bad at this.
Rhaenys.
This is so hard with Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones. It's like we need the whole, spreadsheet planned
out. I'm focusing on House of the Dragons names. You focus on Rings of Power.
Okay.
Names. How's that?
Together we'll be combined.
I'll let you guys talk about Rings of Power.
Yeah.
But, what are they going to think with Rhaenyra's kids, children? Will they accept them as their children or what? Because I think that's going to be a big part of this war that is brewing.
Alicent is going to try to... I have no doubt she's going to try to have those kids killed. I have no doubt.
She may. Well, and you already saw that she told Aegon, you are going to be king. You need to act like one. You need to prepare to be one. And
Aegon...
he's not... the named heir, so she's already working it.
And he doesn't want to be it.
No, he doesn't.
The second kid, I think, is going to be it. I have not read the lore at all, but I think this is just my guess.
But it's not going to be Joffrey or Josh or Luke or whatever those basic names are that Rhaenyra's whenever.
Or Steve.
Steve! Well, wow, House of the Dragons continues to improve every single week. We'll come back and talk about the Rings of Power after this break. Welcome back to The Nerd Show as we wrap up our hour-long talking about the nerdiest things that have happened this week, including Andor, the 3-episode premiere, us talking about some Marvel news in the first segment. Of course, last one was House of the Dragon as we pivot to Rings of Power.
Best episode so far.
I love that series. I just love Lord of the Rings lore in general. It's getting better and better every week. I will say it's really difficult for me to have these two shows that are, I don't want to say basically the same, because House of the Dragon and Lord of the Rings are not the same. Very different, game, if you will. But they're just so similar with that middle-aged feel.
It does have that, but...
It's trippy. But, wow, I'm warming up to Galadriel. She seems to be becoming a little more, and I use this term loosely, human. A little more caring with how she was chatting with Hallgard, I think his name is, from the Southlands. But we got a lot of backstory. Let's start with the giant man and what those – I still don't know what to think of him. But the Harfoots are out on their travel journey. You get to see – I love that explanation of why they move from place to place, that journey on the map across some of those harrowing lands that they have. And I will say, I've done a little bit of research, the Harfoots are a breed of hobbits. I think they're one of three.
Yeah.
And I think I might be onto something, or I was last week, that they might, like Nori and her family, might be the ones to find the Shire.
Could be.
They seem to be a little curious, a little more curious than I think the Harfoots are, but we get to see the giant man who's slowly learning to speak, but he thinks he's Peril.
Yeah.
And they go back, they had a couple of those flashbacks to when he landed and what that flame was. But we also were introduced to, I think, a new, was it a new race or was it a different sect of elves? What are your thoughts, Scott? The people who came up to explore that crater site?
I am not sure. I'm thinking that it is a completely different group of individuals. They're not elves. I don't know who they would be. I don't know enough about the lore to be able to even guess that it would be something. But that was creepy. They were, just that element of there's something else stern in all of this. And
My personal opinion on the matter is I think that they are evil. I think that the giant dude is evil. I think that there's going to be a war trying to get him to be good versus evil, and eventually he's going to turn evil.
Well, the Harfoots aren't going to have any. They're going to be slaughtered in no time. I mean, the wolves would have torn them all apart if he hadn't been there and slapped his hand down. Now, the thing with Nori, the thing that took me out of it was, you know, this guy is some kind of powerful. He can kill fireflies at moment's notice. He can bend the trees and control the weather to an extent. Well, he seems to be healing himself with cold, which isn't, I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign. Anyway, he's, you know, got ice running up his arm, and Nori tries to get him to stop. And then she kind of gets spooked and angry with him.
She gets stuck in it. I mean, part of the ice is like now got her as well. And so she's kind of trapped and she panics and freaks out. And
I forget, she's a child, you know.
She is,
but it's like, come on, he wasn't trying to do that on purpose to harm you. You were trying to wake him up, and he clearly was in a trance.
Scared her and she runs off. So
she did. I was saddened by she's been so open and welcoming to him. But those wolves are gnarly looking. Yep. I think they look worse than the wargs do in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, but those are kind of spooky. But he packs a punch, or an arm, I guess, if you will.
Well, and then we saw all of the humans that decided they didn't want to fight, and they all left, and they went and gave themselves up to the orcs.
You know what I like is the parallels, because it was Hallbrand who was talking about what his people had to do to survive. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a flashback to him.
Yeah.
And then, but I love that parallel. Yeah. He was telling that story to Galadriel as they were marching up to Adar.
Yeah. And then they show up and he's like, well, I pledge myself to you. Are you not Sauron? And kind of freaks out. And then he says, you have to, you know, pledge yourself. You have to be bound by blood. Mm-hmm. And then we don't see it, but you're pretty sure that he then, you know, killed that young man in order to validate his, you know, who he was professing his support for, or that he was binding himself to it, and you know, it was just
they've got a lot of orcs. I mean, they're coming for the humans, and poor Bronwyn looks to be given up, and the elf's trying to get her to stay and fight. Yeah. They're going to get slaughtered. There's no way, but that's kind of a doom and gloom. It's like a Helm's Deep type of feel that they have there. Now we go. I love the relationship between Elrond and Durin.
Yeah,
I think
too.
They're fantastic. I love this from the get-go. I love when they were having dinner. I just thought it was hilarious that he's asking about the stone
the
and
table.
The table and
oh,
where they came
so
across
funny.
It. Because that king's kind of an a-hole, we'll just say, the king of the elves.
Elves have always kind of been like that in the movies.
Not where you get Elrond and Galadriel, and they're kind of the two key features, and they've been the most pure. And I'm glad we still see that with Elrond, if he is torn on whether to keep his vow and his pledge and his oath to Durin about the Mithril, or that tree that they have, which was a cool story, by the way, of them fighting off the Balrog
the
of
Balrog,
Morgoth,
yeah.
The same Balrog that Gandalf fights 1,000 years later. That was so cool. But how that just trickled into make Mithril. I mean, I'm just sitting there, wow, that's how it's connected. And for Elrond to have to go to Durin to say, The fate of the elves
is in your hands. Yeah. And he goes, say that again. I loved it.
That was a cool moment, because I thought Durin would have been furious that Elrond potentially, I mean, he did break an oath. By him saying that he made an oath was, hinting that he knows something, probably the exact thing the king is asking him to do. But he also owns it. He goes and says, I apologize. I wasn't sent for friendship. I was sent for a different purpose. But he doesn't, you know, necessarily say he was manipulated in doing so. He just owns up as a friend. And I think that's powerful to see this strong of a friendship between elves and dwarves that we hadn't seen. But when Legolas and Gimli kind of make amends for it when they're about to die at Helm's Deep, you know, or the final stages of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. But
we see some of that, that where they've kind of had this back and forth relationship, the dwarves and the elves, for, you know, centuries. And obviously this is a moment where it's going to be mended to some degree. But then we also see how it gets destroyed and they, you know, they kind of fall apart between, you know, this story and then the, you know, the Legolas.
Oh, my gosh. Something just came to me. So if Mithril is really meant to save the elves, what if them digging too deep to release the Balrog is the elves' fault?
It could be. Yeah, well, that would really kind of put that whole, you know, that element into context, because if they go too far and they release the Balrog and then he destroys the dwarves' underground kingdom, then, yeah, they'd be a little angry.
A little light bulb moment. Well, I love that they stole the table. That's not this lore. It's like Diva wanted a new table. That's funny.
That was great.
So let's go back to Isildur, and we're over there in Numenor, and they're trying to get everything sent off. There's some unrest, but also just a lot of peril that's coming to Numenor's way. We end with a pretty epic moment of the three ships sailing with Hallbrand accepting that he is going to be king if he goes back to Middle-earth. I love that sequence, and I love that Isildur is going to be sweeping the stables because he is pretty power-hungry, and he wants to prove himself without wanting to prove himself.
Well, he desires to go someplace else to do something completely different, but when the opportunity presents itself, he wants to go back and do the thing that he had kind of thrown away. So,
well, and then we know what happened with Isildur, you know, into the future in the ring. So, wow, there's a lot of what a great show. I'm enjoying all that we've talked about today. So much good nerd happening.
Fantastic nerddom.
Well, we'll be back next week with an all-new nerd show. So just give us a like, give us a follow, and stay tuned for next week, an all-new nerd show. Nerdians, you stay nerdy.